The scripture is from Romans 8, 26 through 28. It's from the Message. Meanwhile, the moment we get tired in the waiting, God's Spirit is right alongside helping us along. If we don't know how or what to pray, it doesn't matter. He does our praying in and for us, making prayer out of our wordless sighs, our aching groans. He knows us far better than we know ourselves, knows our pregnant condition, and keeps us present before God. That's why we can be so sure that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into something good. The Word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Okay. John and Carrie, now, you know, just wait a minute. They're anxious. They want to get it over with. John and Carrie Dreyer are sharing a message today, and we welcome them as we did a few weeks ago into our church family. We're glad you're part of it. Carrie was a student of mine at Dulles. They're about Brian's age. Now she's a teacher. And John is the son of Kathy and George Dreyer. I don't know if I'm going to say this right, you might correct me, but builder, renovator, remodeler, yeah, all those things. I know he did something for us, and he did a great job. And of course, his dad was George, who was an active member for so many years here, filled many positions, sang in the choir, awesome guy. And his mom was also awesome, Kathy. She was active in PTA with my mom, especially down at Taylor. So we're just delighted to have you, and our prayers are with you, and we love you, and don't try not to feel nervous because we're just family. So I'll let you share.
Thanks, Vicki. Yeah, we are nervous. I am not a public speaker, but I did sleep at Holiday Inn last night, so I should be okay. When Scott asked us to talk today, one thing kind of immediately came to my mind, and it was the fact that, I remember in the 92 presidential election, and Ross Perot was running, everybody thought, what's going on here? His running mate was Admiral James Stockdale, and he got up to the podium, and the first thing that he said was, who am I? And why am I here? I thought that was pretty appropriate because a lot of you are probably wondering, who are you two and why are you both here? We're here because Scott asked us to be, but the story is much bigger than that. We're here to talk about our faith and how prayer has affected our lives. 37 years ago, I attended church here with my family, went to Sunday school, was confirmed here, and then around the time that Admiral Stockdale was asking his question, I was going off to college. Went to college, met this really cute girl. She immediately begged me to marry her. I mean, it was kind of embarrassing, really. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. I immediately begged you to marry me. I think that's what I was. We did. We started our lives together, started building a family together. We, at that point, realized that we needed a church home. And we started looking around, and we found a couple. One was in Westwood, where we actually had two of our boys baptized, and one was in Oakley, where our daughter was baptized. And through both of those experiences, we had amazing interactions with people that God had sent to us to make our lives better. We've been blessed ever since those times with our friends. But then last year, two things happened. Church shut down, and my dad died. After dad died, clearly we started taking care of all the arrangements, and I called down here to speak to the current pastor, who I didn't know. And that's when I got to meet Pastor Scott. And immediately we hit it off. I just loved him. We started talking about dad's service and how things would go. And he spoke not only at the funeral, but at the ceremony, or at the cemetery. And that's when I immediately remembered deliberately hearing God's voice through Scott speaking to me. After everything settled down, Carrie and I obviously started coming here on Sundays. And largely based on what God was saying through Scott, and you were open. Many people would hear that and say, gosh, you know, that's a really cool conglomeration of coincidences that got you back to your childhood church 37 years later. But I think it's a lot bigger than that. I know God's bigger than that. He's bigger than a chaos theory or butterfly effect. He used everything between those times to deliberately and intentionally bring us to where he wanted us to be.
Hi. We're just going to kind of share our story and how God showed up for us and when we let him in. So in 2006, I was expecting our third child. We had two healthy boys. The third pregnancy, we were, you know, we had done this, old hat, and we knew we were having a boy. And so the night that I went into labor, it always happened at night, so John likes to say that I try and get him to get no sleep those nights, but so he decided he was going to go and take a nap because we were going to be up all night. And so I went into the bedroom and I was just trying to feel better, get comfortable, and he came in like 10 minutes later and he's just like, are you okay? Like you haven't stopped like kind of groaning. And it's when I realized, like, the contraction never stopped. It started, and it wouldn't stop. And I tried taking a shower. We called the hospital, you know. And we basically figured third kid, it was just coming a lot faster. So we rushed to the hospital, pretty much thinking we'd get there and deliver this baby. And when we got there, they put us into the room right away. Like, we didn't even have to go through all that stuff where you have to sign in, so we knew, like, oh, they know that we're gonna have this baby. And they were like, you're really not that far along. And so it's kind of our first, like, well, what's going on? And doctors came in and out of the room, and yeah, I remember at one point John just said, is everything okay? Yeah, it's fine. And I think it was like the third doctor that came in, and he's looking around, and he finally just looked over at John and I, and he said, Mr. and Mrs. Dreyer, I don't really know how to tell you this, but we can't find a heartbeat. And so he said, well, the reason why there's been so many doctors, they have to have three to finally tell you that your child is no longer living. So, I mean, we didn't even know what to do. I remember John calling my mom and just like, get here now. And then I had a really good friend at the time that was a nurse in labor and delivery, and she was waiting to come in to the next day when I would have the baby. And so she rushed down and she's like, Care, we're gonna find out what happened, you know, we're gonna do every blood test, we're gonna figure it out. And she was making jokes like of all the blood she was taking from me. And next thing I know, she rushes back in and she's got the doctor in hand, and they knew that I had a silent placental abruption, which means the placenta had detached, but the problem was it was pooling inside of me. So at that point, they were no longer just worried about the baby, they were worried about my health, and really they wanted to do a C-section and get the baby out right away. But they couldn't because of this bleeding. I was having this disorder called DIC, which means if they would have tried to do the C-section, I probably wouldn't have been able to clot back up and heal. So C-section was off the table, and I was only 2 centimeters at the time. And this, I'm fully, I mean, we were 38 weeks, so this is a full-term baby. He was 8 pounds. And at that point, my friends just, you gotta envision yourself at 10 centimeters, and with prayer from all over. I was able to push, and I was able to deliver Ben.
So we're doing this as a team because obviously no two people experience the same thing in the same way. You know, when you're in the middle of something, you're dealing with it, especially if it's happening to you, you can just kind of get yourself into the situation and get through it and not really think about what's going on. Whereas when you're outside of the situation, you're watching it happen and trying to make sense of it. And that was me. So I remember basically everything that she said, except watching the fact that I just lost my third son, and now the nurses and doctors are pretty much telling me that there's a good chance I'm going to lose my first wife and only wife.
Way to make an icebreaker.
Yeah. But you know, the heaviness was kind of immense. I mean, she was definitely in DIC. She couldn't deliver. She wasn't ready to deliver Ben. Ready to deliver Ben. She couldn't have a C-section because of the clotting disorder. And, you know, that was the first time I can recall ever intently and deliberately and continually praying without ceasing. It was just in my brain. It was not a conscious prayer the whole time. It was more of a, it was just who I was at that moment. I was continually talking to God, you know, save my wife, heal her. I can't raise the two boys that I have on my own. No way could I possibly raise the two boys I had on my own. They'd definitely be in years of therapy. They gave her transfusions and platelets during that time, and we were praying, and you know, against all odds, she literally did survive the situation. We left the hospital. We had to leave the hospital to attend and plan Ben's funeral. She was only able to take a leave from the hospital because she was still pretty sick. So she left with an IV and came back to the hospital to receive further treatment. And, you know, you would think in terms of prayer that, okay, my wife's healthy now, she's home. But it didn't stop with that, because I think what God was doing intentionally with me was starting my intentional prayer life, my continual prayer life. Because every night we'd lay in bed, and I would remember praying for her, her health, her safety. It was something I couldn't even let go of. I had to pray for her. And I know for a fact that what God was doing in that moment, in those days and weeks and months prior to and leading beyond, was training me for future things to come.
So at this point, John and I think even in the hospital, I had two things. We started praying very intentionally, and I knew that this was not the end of my journey. I knew that this couldn't be the last time I gave birth, and I remember praying, God is not a vengeful God. I know he didn't do this to teach me some lesson, like, and I look back at that, and I'm like, was I praying that to remind myself of that, or because I really believed it? Either way, you know, I knew that this was not his plan. This was not his plan. And so I wanted to be pregnant again right away. I was set on that, and probably not God's intent right away, because I did get pregnant, and we actually miscarried in between. And then I had I was pregnant with our daughter Reese, and I remember going to the doctor's office where we're going to find out if it's a boy or a girl, and I just didn't need any surprises. We had we hadn't found out with our first two, and then we wanted to know with our third, and this one there was no, like, we need to know, no surprises. And the doctor came in and she was all excited. It's a girl, you're finally having a girl. And then she starts telling us about these markers on her head that are indication that she probably will have Down syndrome or could have Down syndrome. And I remember I was so angry at that doctor, because I was like, I could care less if I'm having a boy or a girl. I just want a healthy baby. And so when we started to go home, and so if you know Kathy, one of the things she did, she babysat our boys when they were little, and so she was babysitting. Her and George were over there, and on Wednesday she'd make dinner for us, and it was just a real blessing. So she was there, had this, you know, they were all excited to find out if we were having a boy or a girl. She invited my parents there, so they were all there, and I kind of looked at John, I think, when we went in the front door, and I said, I'm not ready to share all this. We can tell them we're having a girl, but I'm just not ready. And you could tell they just weren't understanding why I wasn't happy. And, like, I mean, my mom and Kathy were, oh, we're having a girl. And they were so excited. And I couldn't get there. And so I maybe lasted 2 days, maybe probably not even that long, where I decided, like, I can't just keep this in. God wants me to be praying. He wants other people to be praying for us. And so we did. We started praying and sharing. And this was a high-risk pregnancy because of losing my son, having the stillborn. And so I was at the doctor a lot. And at one point, the doctor came in, and he said, because of platelets and the blood transfusions I had with my son, I had developed this, I don't know what you call it, like, where it, basically my body was trying to get rid of the pregnancy. And so there were, like, these markers, and it, like, started at 4. And he said, and then they doubled to 8, and they doubled to 16. And it's called, like, Kellen Duffy was the name of it. And he said, you know, each time they'll double, and if they double too much, we have to deliver the baby. And at this point, I was like, well, that can't happen. I'm only like 20, 22 weeks, 24 weeks, somewhere in there. And so I said, no, you know, this can't happen. And we started praying, and, you know, the numbers doubled one more time to the 32. And at this point, we had a family of friends that were all praying for us. And my mom, I remember she was, like, on a mission trip in Africa. We had people literally praying around the world, leaders of churches in other countries. And we went into the doctor's office, and the numbers just were gone. That's the first time I, like, truly experienced a miracle, like right there. And we have no reason to say why your numbers stopped doubling, but they did. And so, so that we ended up delivering Reese. She was healthy. She was small, but she was healthy, and you know, came new worries of having her at home, but she was, you know, we were excited and happy. And so I had an aunt. My aunt babysat my kids, and very lucky, she decided to give up her job at Christ Hospital and watch my cousin and my kids. And this one day, Reese is 3 months old, and I was going in to drop her off, and she had ate before, so I was like, she's fine, she's napping, Pam put her down. Usually my aunt has, like, sometimes 6 kids, but, like, just depending on the day, and that day she only had Reese. And she just said she kept sleeping, and I was at school. I worked real close there, and I got this phone call at my work, and I never got in a phone call that they pulled me out of classroom. I can remember, like, I was in science lab. I'm a teacher, and I was walking, and then I jog, and I kept telling myself, like, nothing's wrong. Like, it's fine. Someone just needs something. Walking, then running, walking, and I got to the office, and they gave me the phone, and this woman just said, Carrie, this is your Aunt Pam's neighbor, and I just want to let you know that Reese stopped breathing in her crib, and they've rushed her to Children's Hospital. And at that point, I didn't even, it was like a scene in a movie. I don't know who took the phone. I think I fell to the ground. I didn't know what to even do. My friend said, I'm getting the car, and my boss went and ran and got my purse, and I remember the whole time I was going to the hospital, I just said, you know, I had learned, God, I know this child is yours. I know this child is yours, but I just want to raise her. I want to raise her. I want to be her mom. And I think I prayed like that the entire time my friend drove me to the hospital.
So Carrie mentioned miracle number one or two. I forget. I think the first one was Carrie surviving, personally. But then, so yeah, I received the same phone call. I worked in Vandalia, Ohio, which is north of Dayton at the time, and Reese had been taken to Children's in Clifton, so it was not a short drive. I took a drive that should be about an hour and 10 minutes and made it 35. Miracle number two or three, I'm not sure. And like Carrie said, on her way to the hospital, and we didn't know this until after the fact, but my intent prayer the entire time was the very same thing. It was, God, we know that Reese is yours, that we're all yours, but just let me raise her first, you know. And I called some other family and asked them all to pray, you know, that same prayer, just save her, you know. Getting down to the hospital was an adventure, to say the least. Got there, got to the ER. The ER was a complete chaotic place. Found Carrie, found where Reese was in the room there, and I couldn't see Reese because she was so little, and there was 10 or so odd people swarming around her, basically trying to save her life. And you know, again, through the whole thing, it's so weird. It's like, you would think you're crippled in anger and fear and despair, and maybe you are, but I just think you're also, in a weird way, crippled in prayer, if that makes sense. Like, you just have to pray, and you do it the entire time without thinking about it. They got her stable, found out that she had had a stroke in three lobes of the brain, had a seizure on the table. So, you know, we know we're in a pretty bad situation with her. Her main doctor came to us and took us into a little quiet room and started talking to us about, you know, where we went from here. And it was kind of like my conversation with the doctor a few years prior with Carrie. That she was just telling us that, look, it doesn't look good. She was deprived of oxygen. The stroke and her brain so young, we don't know what we're going to get. She was pretty much preparing us for a vegetable. So, you know, obviously we're distraught. But in the middle of that meeting, of her telling us all these things, she gets called back to the PICU where Reese is being attended to. And so we come with her, which was either a really good idea or a really bad idea. I'm still not sure. To the same scene, you know, the doctors are all rushing around her. They can't get this IV into her, which is extremely important at the time. I don't remember why, but it was. Several different people tried. Finally, you could see the desperation in their eyes, like, this has to happen or she's not going to make it. So during this, we're just freaking out. You know, it's like we're huddled in a corner. We're praying for God to heal her. We're praying to keep us strong, all these things. And literally, like within minutes or seconds, I don't remember which, this man came in, went directly to Reese, gave her an IO, which I think is a needle straight through the bone or something like that, to give her what she needed. And like, just like he came in as fast as he left, and he was gone. And we later found out that his name is Ben. And to put that into perspective and think that Ben saved Reese, it's nothing short of miraculous to me. I mean, it reinforces what I've always believed, that God's watching and he takes care of his kids. So he did. Ben left as fast as he came in. And again, we continued on with prayer. We called everybody we knew. We had prayer for days and months. Reese spent 4 days in the PICU. She did get stronger. I remember being able to hold her, and Carrie being able to hold her. She spent an additional 7 days in the general floor, which was just a crazy different experience too. But they were so good to her. They took such good care of her. And that entire time, all we had was God and our friends and our family to lean on. And they all took care of us. It was just in ways that you can't even imagine. Fast forward just a little bit. Last week, Reese turned 14 on the beach. She received high honors in school this year. She's the goalie for the soccer team, and she dances. She's a miracle.
So yeah, we're very blessed, and we really can't wait to see what God has for that little one, because he definitely had his hands on her. So 4 years ago, my dad came to me and he just said, actually all me and my two brothers, and said, I've been going to the doctor for a while. He gets regular colonoscopies, and he said, I get, like, in between, like, 3 years, he would get, like, 10 more polyps. Like, it shouldn't be growing that fast. And so his doctor tried to get some genetic testing done, and they said no, because he's never had any kind of cancer. So he said, the doctor has suggested that the three of you go ahead and have a colonoscopy right now, not wait till you're 50. I was 38 at the time that he said this, and I knew it was important to my dad and my mom, so I said I would do it, and I probably waited a year or so before I went and did it. And I remember going to the doctor's office, and they were all just like, why are you here? You know, you're 40 years old. And I told them the story, and they're like, yeah, it's a good idea. Get it done. And the next thing I know, I was waking up, and the doctor was talking to me, and John was holding my hand. And I remember just in and out, like, not hearing what this doctor is saying. And I finally came to when he said, well, I don't think you'll need a colostomy bag. And I, like, oh my gosh, this guy's telling me I have cancer. Like, what is going on? And I remember, once again, gotta pray. And so I remember texting all my real close friends and just saying, I don't know what's happening. Like, just keep praying. Like, something wasn't right with the colonoscopy. And they were all praying. And when I got home, I was tired, and I just wanted to take a nap. And when I finally woke up from the nap, the text I had were just so many. But I also had messages from the hospital, and they were like, we want you to come in tonight and get a CT scan. I was like, okay, I didn't just dream this. This is tonight? Like, really? And so I went in, and I had tons of tests over the next couple weeks, and they couldn't find the cancer, and they just kept saying, don't get your hopes up. And I know I'm going to keep praying. We had prayer circle. My friends came and we prayed, and because they could not find that it was cancer, they were like, we're going to go ahead and have the surgery to remove the tumor, and then we'll biopsy that. So I had that, and the surgery had gone like a week, and my mom said, oh, have you gotten the results? And I wasn't even thinking about it. And I think another week went by, and I finally was feeling stronger from the surgery. And I think it was the first day I might have been alone, and Dr. Paquette, my surgeon, called, and he was like, they found the cancer in a lymph node. And so I was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer at the age of 40. And I remember just my prayers. In fact, we were in Hilton Head this week, and my memory was of these intentional prayers, and my prayers were just for John. He's dealing with 2 ailing parents at the time, 3 kids that are completely active, and his own business, and now this on top of it, like, how's he gonna survive that? And I remember praying for my kids and just wanting them to have the normalcy. You know, I didn't want this to change them or what they were doing. And I remember praying for my doctors just to figure out what was going on. And the difference is, like, it's just very intentional prayer. I remember, you know, people just wanting to say, well, this is your mountain. I've been to the mountain. I've been to the top. I've been down. I've been up. I've been down. I'm just angry. I was just angry. I was so mad that this was happening. And I was allowed to be, you know. And then with the chemo, I had, you know, we had our rounds of that. I have friends that offered to take me for fluids, and they were just, it was very intentional, the prayer and the support that we had during all that. And I will be 4 years cancer-free in October, so God got us through that. So, you know, the story, I have had people say to me, I can't believe you guys have gone through all this and how this has happened. And I say, look at all the good. Look at all the good that happened, you know. Because of the losing our son, John and I became so much more intentional in our journey with God. We became prayerful. We became, you know, really developing that relationship with God. And then it was hard at the time, because I would have done anything, as all of you would, for your kid. Like, I didn't want to survive. I wanted to save my son, but there was none of that. The fact that I survived to still be this mom, it was, you know, I like to focus on that. And then with Reese, you know, thank goodness it was my aunt that had my baby and cared enough to go get a sleeping child out of a crib and find her. She knew CPR. She rushed outside, and there happened to be a children's hospital nurse outside who never was off. I focus on that. I focus on the fact that God showed up. God showed up so many times with Reese. She's here because of him. And then, you know, with this cancer diagnosis, who gets a colonoscopy at 40? You know, the fact that that the doctor recommended, my dad asked, and I went. You know, that's a miracle in itself. And in fact, I had all the genetic testing done, and it's not in there is no cancer link that they can find. It doesn't mean, obviously, it's there. My grandma, my dad, me, and now my two kids. Because of that, I knew to get them tested, and they both, at 16, my older ones, had polyps that are now gone because they went and had that done. So, I say, look at all the blessings instead of all the, look at the good that he's created from the bad.
So you've heard us talk a lot about prayer the entire time. We thought that the most poignant closing verse would be from 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 16 through 18. Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Jesus Christ. And this is how we have tried over the last 15 years to live our lives. We're certainly not perfect. We're still in training. There's still training to come, but we know that God will be there always to strengthen us and to keep us close to him. And for that, we will continue to pray and love him.
Thank you. Thank you.